Welcome to Career Tools. This week, interviewing your future boss. The questions this cast answers are, how do I interview my potential new boss? What questions should I ask my potential future boss? And what should I be thinking about during the interview of my potential new boss?
Folks, if you don't know it, if you're listening and you don't get any emails from us, you don't get notified about things that are coming out and so on, you're probably just a listener. And that's great. As long as we're going to be here, there'll always be a place for you to listen and for us not to know you. It would be helpful to us, and hopefully you'll reciprocate because we hope we've been helpful to you. It would be helpful for us if you'd become a member. It's free. All you have to do is go to the website, sign up. It takes 20 seconds. We're not going to bombard you with mails. We're not going to send you a lot of spam. We just want to let you know some of the news about stuff we're doing. And again, it's free and it unlocks all kinds of free services. If you want to download forms from the website, if you want to use the forums, you just got to have one of those free memberships. And then at some point, hopefully we will have served you well enough that you'll transition and you'll become a licensee. And that opens up a whole nother raft of benefits. And that's $200 a year. But according to our finance person, there's $475 worth of products in there. And that's because we believe in a saying we made up, which is Tiffany advice at Walmart prices. So come be a member. Come to the website. Sign up. Thanks.
So this guidance came out of a question we were asked recently, but it actually comes up probably once every 3 months or so with the same situation, which this person found themselves in. They said, after recently joining a new company, my new boss left. So they joined a new company and then the boss who had hired them left. I will be involved in the interviewing process for my new manager. What should I definitely ask and what topics should I avoid? And sometimes it's worded differently, but in essence, people are in the interview part of the interview process for the role that will manage them. And in some organizations, it's common for directors to be asked to interview their potential future bosses. But it's often asked of inexperienced directs who wouldn't normally be hiring, who wouldn't normally be interviewing, and probably have only been through the interview process as the interviewee. And they're nervous about what they're supposed to do, what they can say, what they can't say. And so in this guidance, we're going to tell you.
Yeah. And Wendy, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense that this is kind of a trend, right? Like was much less common, you know, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of become, what is the phrase? Like avant-garde or
yeah.
Like, it's like
trendy.
It's a trendy thing, right? And so it's trending in that direction.
Yes.
So if you're not, if you're, you know, reading the show notes for this or you're listening to this cast and you're thinking, well, if you're reading the show notes, you wouldn't hear my voice. but if you're listening to this cast and you're thinking, I don't necessarily think that I could find myself in this situation, you might be wrong.
Yes.
I mean, it might be something that your organization adopts in the near term. So our outline for today is prepare and conduct an effective interview. Follow the process. Use the interview creation tool. What everyone misses, this is the first meeting with your new boss, and make the decision.
I originally wrote this cast and I had a different beginning and Mark said, no, you've got it wrong. You have to tell them at the beginning that they're actually conducting an interview. And I was like, oh yeah. So the first piece is prepare and conduct an effective interview. Because the situation that the listener found themselves in isn't uncommon. And there's like a bunch of reasons that companies give for using this strategy to get buy-in from the team that person is going to manage. And that always, if the team's bought in, then it makes it easier for the manager when they are hired. Sometimes it's to give inexperienced interviewers the opportunity to practice in a kind of low stakes way. Sometimes it's giving the interviewee, the candidate, the opportunity to meet some of the people who might be in their team and find out what they're like. Sometimes it's a demonstration of the company's values of inclusivity and respect and those kind of words that companies are fond of. So there's all sorts of reasons. And what we want you to do is not worry about what the reasons are to some extent and just think, this is an interview and I am going to conduct a professional interview. You have to assume that whatever you do is part of the process that's going to be valued, that the output of what you do in the interview is valuable to the process.
Yeah. Assume your voice is legitimate, right? Mm-hmm. Is that will be listened to. And that may or may not be the case, but that's out of your control.
Exactly.
So do what is within your control, which is being effective and being a professional.
Yeah. You've probably figured out from the people around you whether or not you're going to be able to sway the other interviewers. You know, if there's three other interviewers and they're your boss's peers, then, you know, probably your voice against them, you're not going to sway them. That doesn't mean that they're not wanting to hear from someone who might work for this person. Oh, I feel like I could work for that person. And there's some other reasons for doing a proper interview, a thorough and professional interview, like you'll have a really good idea of the strengths and weaknesses of this future boss. You have an opportunity to impress that boss, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And you have a chance to practice interviewing, which is, again, something that most people don't get enough practice at, even if they are at the level where they're hiring people.
Exactly. And sometimes people will think, I don't have a good enough handle on what my boss's job entails, right? I only see what I see. And so maybe people may have misgivings about interviewing someone for a job that they're not even themselves that familiar with. You don't need to know all the details of your boss's job to interview them effectively. Interview based on what you know, right? You do know some of the things, some of the aspects of your boss's job. And, you know, there are those places where your current boss or the boss that preceded who you're interviewing, their work intersects with your work. And there's behaviors that you've seen. You know, maybe for our listener, they didn't have as large of a data set, but certainly if you've worked with someone for a while, you'll be able to see behaviors that you've seen in that role that are that you find particularly effective or otherwise, mm-hmm. right? And so that would be helpful. Asking questions about the management of areas that you work in, right, would make sense because those are the areas in which you're probably the best able to evaluate the candidate's answers. And this happens in interviewing, right? Every interviewer asks probing questions throughout the interview that probe into a specific area that's of interest really for the interviewer,
exactly.
right?
I mean, yeah.
So this happens. This is not, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel here. And so that also sometimes leaves out areas in which you're not interested in and areas you wouldn't know much about, which is completely fine.
Yeah. If you interviewing for a technical role, for example, and you're not technical, we tell you, don't ask technical questions because you can't judge the answers. You know, talk about the other thing or ask questions about the other things that make up that role. So this is no different.
Yeah.
Next up, follow the process. So if there is a hiring or interviewing process in your company, follow that. And if not, use the interview creation tool, which we're going to talk about in a second. So some companies have a robust interviewing system, including, you know, reviewing requirements for the role and analyzing the applicant's resume and phone screens and multiple, but single interviewer. So serially multiple interviews with standard questions and a meeting at the end to discuss whether or not the team of interviewers wants to hire or not hire that person. And in that case, you'll know exactly what to do because the company will have a procedure and you'll be following it. And there's no questions that you need to ask. Just, I was going to say, do as you're told. But essentially, that's my high D way of saying, do as you're told.
Right, exactly. And if, as Wendy laid out all of those steps in an effective interviewing process, you may have noticed that your company doesn't have each of those things, or maybe none of those things. And that's okay. In our experience, it's safe to say that your organization probably doesn't have all of those steps. Most organizations that, you know, we work with or that we hear about, very few companies have a robust hiring process. A lot of companies are actually, I find it's ironic that they're always in a transition in their hiring process, right? Well, this is the new step. We're taking out this step. And every step or every process is a little different, which is by definition not a process.
Yeah.
So the company may have parts of it. It may be more loosely structured. There may be no structure at all. And so if that's the case, just know that whatever process is in place, follow it and know that you may have to consult other resources.
Supplements and things.
Supplement.
And it's entirely possible and quite usual, in fact, that the process is just a series of steps that people tend to follow. A sort of historical, it reminds me of, I don't know if it's apocryphal, there's a thing about, I think, a university where they had a square of grass and they were trying to decide where to put the paths, and they decided not to put the paths down and just see where people walked. And after a week, you know, they've worn the grass out and that's where they put the paths, which is straight across the middle, of course, because people take that shortest route. But in your company, there's probably a path that has been trodden by the people before you. And if that exists, follow that, even if it's not called the process or it's not written down anywhere. Like, this is not the time to push back or to suggest that everybody does something entirely different.
Yeah.
If you've been invited to this interview process, it's really unlikely that you have, that it's the right moment to tell them this is a really rubbish process and we should do it differently.
Yeah. Well said. So the next point here is use the interview creation tool. If you don't have a process, use our interview creation tool. You have access to it as long as you have a manager tools license. It asks you 64 questions about what's important in the role and then produces a 10-page interview that's tailored for that role with a script to begin the interview. I constantly find myself raving about the interview creation tool. I think it's vastly underutilized. I've used it in my career. I love it. I've shared it with other people. They've started using it. It is so helpful. The story I tell people, I've probably told it here, but the story I tell people is I remember sitting down with recruiters to hire managers or senior managers, and they say, okay, do you want someone who's good at, you know, customer service? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want someone who's good at technical skill? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want someone who's good at giving presentations?
Yeah.
And then we go down like 5 or 6 questions and I go, who's saying no to these questions?
Yeah, right. I want someone who's brilliant at everything.
Right. I want that unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that then they write these job descriptions or these ad posts, the job ads, and they're just
that person
doesn't exist. And the interview creation tool forces you to say, this skill is less important than this skill. And that is incredibly valuable and makes for a better interview, for sure.
Definitely. And it makes it slightly frustrating, people tell us, but it's worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, it's things that are easy, or I'm sorry, things that are hard are worthwhile, right? The other thing I like about the interview creation tool is when you get the interview guide, you get the actual questions, it actually tells you also what to look for in the answers, right? What's a strong answer? What's a weak answer? And so even if you are brand new to interviewing, which is very likely if you find yourself in this situation, you have what you need. You have everything right in front of you and you have space to take notes, right?
Yeah. It's like we did all of the work.
Yeah, it's there for you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You can also use the ICT if there's a process, but nobody tells you what the questions are for the interview. Or there's, or there's questions, but nobody tells you what to look for. You could use the ICT as a supplement.
Absolutely. Our next point is what everyone misses. Mm-hmm. This is the first meeting with your new boss.
So this is the really important part. And like, it goes over everybody's head. Everybody's worrying about whether or not they should say hi or no hi, or what questions should I ask and what topic should I avoid? And none of that, it does matter.
We say all the time, the most important thing in your career is your relationship with your boss.
Exactly.
And you should look at this as the jumping off point for hopefully a great relationship with your new boss.
Exactly. So let's just put to bed some of the worries that you might be thinking about. So you might be worrying about asking the right questions, and we've just solved that with the ICT. Mm-hmm. You might worry about effectively assessing the candidate when you've not been in that role or you don't feel like you understand the role completely. And again, we've just solved that for you because the interview for what you know of your boss's role, use the interview creation tool and it will tell you what to look for. You might worry about whether or not you'll get a gut feel about this candidate or not. And we tell you not to worry about that at all. Experienced recruiters do have a gut feel, but that's based on the hundreds of interviews that they've done. And it's just a shortcut. Their brain, if you ask them, they could go through all the steps of, I asked the question, I was looking for this, I heard that, I added these three things together and got this. And that's what their gut feel does. But you can't jump from, I've done one interview to gut feel.
Their brain just gets there quicker through repetition, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's not, that gut feel is very much kind of a heuristic for a process that they just have done over and over again.
Yeah. So don't worry about it. You can be as effective as someone who's interviewed hundreds of times and has a gut feel by going through the process logically.
Yeah, absolutely. So if these are things that you're worrying about, you're missing what's important. And what's important is that this is the first time you'll meet someone who potentially will be your boss. And so this gives this meeting an entirely different flavor.
Yeah.
Take away the interview part. If this person was being brought around the team by your boss's boss, introducing her as your potential new boss, what would you want that meeting to be like? You'd want to be your best professional self. And that's not just about them impressing you, right? You also want to impress her, right? You want to impress upon them that this is your opportunity to make an impression and, you know, show them how you can demonstrate professionalism and, you know, begin to build this relationship. A small little thing that I would just add here is, I mean, I've done tons of interviews and I can't think of a single time where I have interviewed someone with my boss, where my boss has been able to observe me interviewing someone.
Right.
And I consider that, I consider myself pretty good. I've learned from the best here at Manager Tools. So I consider that to be a skill that my boss has never seen. My bosses in my career have never seen. They'll never see it, right? Because that's just not part of most processes. You interview and then you potentially move them to your boss to, you know, interview. But what a great opportunity to say, hey, this is how I interview.
Yeah. This thing that I could get away with doing really badly because one's going to see me do it. I'm still going to do it well. That's a message.
Yeah. In 2 or 3 years, when I'm hiring for someone and you're wondering what that interview process looks like with me hiring for someone who works for me, you'll know exactly to a T what it looks like.
And most people are terrible at interviewing. In fact, most people are terrible at meetings in general, and interviewing is a meeting. And so you don't actually have to do very much to look good in this meeting, which is not to say that we're encouraging you to set the bar at better than everybody else, because that's still something you'd need to limbo under. So, for example, be on time. Like, it's the most basic of professional behaviors, but so few people do it. Yeah. And being on time also allows you to discover whether or not your boss was on time, your potential new boss. And that tells you something about their perception of time. Some people have a very exact perception of time and, you know, 10 o'clock is 10 o'clock is 10 o'clock. Other people are more loose about it. And, you know, why not find that out before that person even starts as your boss? So if you're one of those people who's really loose about it, and you discover that this potential new boss looks at their watch as you walk into reception to check that it's actually 1 minute to 10, you know something about the way your work life is going to go if this person is hired.
Yeah. There are some really basic professional interview behaviors. We have just kind of a quick list here. Number one is read the resume ahead of time, right? Read it ahead of time. Don't read it
in front
when you sit down in front of them. Have a question list, right? Use the ICT, use your company's interview guides if they have them, but have a question list. Don't try to wing it.
No, make up questions as you go.
Make up questions as you go. Have a firm handshake. Shake hands firmly. Make eye contact. Smile. You may be thinking, well, I'm not naturally a smiler. Yeah, and you can smile. And this is an area where this would be a good idea to do so. Take notes. Now, we always recommend you take handwritten notes. That means not typing them into a laptop, right? You're taking handwritten notes during this process.
You can use an Apple Pencil and an iPad or something similar. Typing with a keyboard, that's the thing that's...
I like to say your hand is making the shape of letters. I think I got that from Sarah. Yeah, that was good. Ask follow-up questions. So don't just leave it at the standard interview questions, but as the conversation evolves, as they maybe touch on something that you want to know more about, or that, you know, borderlines or overlaps into your area of work or interest, ask questions about that, right?
You can tell good interviewers. If you start to listen to interviews, if you listen to a bunch of podcasts that are amateurs, as it were, you can tell a good interviewer from a bad one, because bad interviewers will ask a question, the person answers, and they say, thanks, or yes, or something affirmative. And then they ask another question that's unrelated or related to the interview, but not related to the answer. And you can tell there's like a disconnect there.
Yeah.
It's very
segmented, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas good interviewers ask a follow-up question that segues into their next question. And if you pay attention, you can hear that. And once you can hear it, you can do it too in interviews.
Yes, absolutely. And the last point here is don't allow yourself to be distracted or interrupted. Turn off notifications, turn off your computer, turn off anything that could distract, close the door, right? Whatever you need to do to make sure that you don't get distracted, because that takes away from your professionalism in the interview.
And you need to be concentrating. You are listening to someone, writing down what they're saying, trying to look at their body language and their tone of voice and all of those things. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a lot out of your brain. And so having the minimum number of other things to think about is a good thing.
Absolutely.
And in the interview, you want to help the interviewee shine. Yeah. And that means help them answer the questions when they get stuck. So if you've asked about, tell me about a time when you were working on a project that got behind and how you solved that problem. And they look at you like, I have no answer for this question. I have my mind just went entirely blank. You can help them by prompting them like, oh, or maybe you had a project, it wasn't behind time, but it was over budget. Or maybe in your role, you probably do projects around process improvement. Is there one of those? Helping somebody answer a question is not, you don't lose anything as an interviewer. Most people, it's just nerves that makes their mind go blank. It's not that they don't have an answer. It's not that they can't do that skill. It's not that they don't have that experience. It's just that it won't come to mind for them. And so if you give them another couple of seconds by giving them a prompt or letting them say something or even saying, don't worry, take your time, that loosens them up enough for them to answer the question. If you get a series of questions where they don't give you a good answer in terms of having the experience or being able to understand what skills they were using or talking about communication with other people, that tells you something about their experience and skills and so on. But helping them answer the question because they've got that deer in the headlights look, that you're not losing anything.
No, and I would even expand on that a little bit, Wendy, to say that good interview questions are very specific. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice if you use the interview creation tool, we ask very specific targeted questions because we're looking for specific behaviors. Sometimes it's just a matter of the nerves and the fact that they're like, does this example that I had in my mind fit your, and they're just mm-hmm. thinking through that, trying to figure out, does that, or am I trying to figure out how to fit a round peg in a square hole, right? I mean, that type of thing. So I think that could be another function of it as well.
I would say good interviewers do that as a matter of course. They help the candidate shine. But mm-hmm. the good thing about it is that if that person is hired and becomes your boss, they're going to remember that you were the person that helped them and you weren't the person who shone a light on them and, you know, made it like an interrogation. Yeah. You were the person who made interviewing easy.
Right. You didn't just stare at them and go, I'm waiting.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah.
Hey, folks, this podcast is coming out on 10 March, a Thursday, which is when Career Tools always comes out. And next Thursday, we'll be having a pretty big announcement. We're launching a new product. It'll be available for sale next Thursday. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Some of you can probably guess. We hope to overturn an industry that we are a part of and don't really like. And so we've built our own product and going to price it so that it's pretty hard to resist. So tune in next Thursday as we launch our new product. We'll talk to you then.
Our last point here, well, I guess it's not our last point, but in our outline is make the decision. The Manager Tools interview results capture meeting is the capstone of the interview process. We tell hiring managers to get all the interviews together, all the interviewers together, and have them report on the interview. The report has two parts. The first and paramount thing is they've got to say hire or don't hire, right? They have to make a decision. We do this because the hiring manager doesn't get to walk the fence. Mm-hmm. They have to make a decision. And so every interviewer shouldn't get to walk the fence. They have to make a decision. And then provide supporting examples from the interview for this decision. There are many advantages to this meeting and reporting structure, but two are particularly relevant to you. First is, like I said, it forces a decision. Too many interviewers leave interviews and say, oh yeah, he was nice, or I liked her, or yeah, I got a good feeling. Yeah.
I could work for him.
Right, exactly. Yet they either can't or they don't want to make that decision, hire or don't hire. And it goes back to knowing that that hiring manager has to make that decision is just you understanding your role in the process, which is crucial.
And knowing that you're going to have to make that decision changes what you ask in the interview and what you listen for.
Absolutely.
It stops it being a chat and, oh, I'll just listen to their stories, and actually makes you listen for particular things that you think are essential in that role.
Yeah. And those things being actual behaviors,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's the second part. The second part is it forces you to evaluate candidates' actual behaviors instead of developing your kind of feel or your sense of them as a candidate. And this is where, you know, Wendy talked about experienced interviewers do get a feel. I mean, it's based on tons and tons of data and experiential experiences. So yes, it forces you to look at and listen for particular behaviors. So the best way to say it is, if you haven't had those years of experience, take good notes, evaluate the answers that you've got, then come to the conclusion. Don't develop the conclusion
and then
as
try and
you're
find
listening.
The answer. Don't try and evaluate while you're interviewing. All mm-hmm. you're doing is asking questions and writing down the answers. Then you evaluate, because they're different skills and you can't do that many things in an interview. Once you've evaluated, then you draw a conclusion.
Right.
Because doing it the other way around, you can find the examples to support the conclusion you want to make. Everybody can do that.
But oh, absolutely.
That's not the way to go in. That's how you make the wrong hire. And the wrong hire is miserable.
Yeah. You don't get a good first impression and then just try to confirm mm-hmm. that first impression, or get a bad first impression and try to confirm that bad first impression. Yeah, well said.
So unless you work at a Manager Tools workplace, and it's unlikely there will be an interview results capture meeting. And despite that, we recommend that you go through the process and use this format to make your recommendation, whether you're emailing the hiring manager or giving them a verbal report, because the format forces you to do things which are helpful to the decision, it's still a useful exercise to go through. You're practicing the skills of making the decision and supporting it with evidence. And that's a skill that few people have. And the other thing is, you're probably sending a report or giving a verbal report to your boss's boss, and doing so in an organized and focused manner cannot be a bad thing in terms of impressing them.
Absolutely. So what will this report look like or contain? Well, like we said, first, you give a recommendation, hire or no hire, right? We hire this person or we don't hire this person. And then you give your supporting information or your input, feedback, whatever you want to call it, in three or potentially four parts. Those parts are interpersonal, cultural, skills, and then that fourth part could be technical. But you only provide technical input if you're qualified to share it. So if you're interviewing a project manager for an IT organization and you're the marketing person, right, you're not going to give feedback on technical skills because you're not a project manager or, you know, that's not your
It's not something
wheelhouse.
You understand. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So for each of the three or four areas, you use the what and why format. So for interpersonal, how well did they interact with you and why do you say that? For cultural, how well do you think they fit with the firm, with the organization, and why do you say that? For skills, what you saw in the behavioral interview questions, including the communication of the answers, and why do you say that? And then if you are answering or you are giving feedback on technical, this is the fourth and really only applies to things that you feel like you can add value to. And then why do you say that?
And the why you say that forces you to find a specific answer or behavior from the interview that shows competence in that area. That's another thing. You cannot assume that people have certain things that they haven't demonstrated in the interview.
Oh, absolutely.
It's about the interview. That's what that matters. That forces you to look for those things while you're interviewing. Now, about the hire, no hire decision, if you're going to say no, you're going to have some bravery. In fact, if you're going to say no or yes, you're going to have some bravery, especially if you don't know what everybody else is going to say. You know, it's always good to go last because then you know what everybody else said, right? But to make that decision, you're going to have to know that you went through this process, that you have the support for the decision that you're making, because potentially this person could be your next boss and you could have said, no, don't hire them.
Yep.
And there's some bravery.
Yeah. Well, I think it's one of Horseman's laws, right? There are no secrets.
There are no secrets.
And so
they're going to find out.
And so there's a chance they find out and you're going to have to be able to say, maybe not to them, they may never bring it up, but at least to yourself, I had a good, valid reason for saying no. And just be able to put your head on your pillow at night.
Exactly, exactly. So sometimes directs go into these meetings thinking there's some zinger question that they're supposed to know that will prove that this person's the best or the worst candidate. And hiring is much more mundane than that. Most candidates are 80% of the way there, because otherwise you wouldn't be interviewing them. Often there's multiple candidates who would be good at a role. So there isn't this, you know, oh, I'm going to find Superman using my special question. That's not what it's like. It's much more like, these are the same questions that I've asked every other time, and I'm going to find somebody who's 95% of the way there. Your job isn't to find that zinger question. It's to conduct a professional, effective, measured interview and deliver a well-reasoned report. And at the same time, don't forget that you're meeting your potential new boss, and showing them how professional you are and helping them shine does no harm to your future relationship.
Exactly. If you're looking for a slam dunk, Wendy already works here, so
it's not gonna happen. You're so sweet. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.